Listen, there's a great work to be done. As soon as you win this court battle, you must deliver this message. Take advantage of this opportunity and declare a powerful message to this world. He expects more of us. He believes we can do more. Who's going to stop Christ? Who's going to stop Christ from getting this work done?
This is Behind the Work.
Welcome to Behind the Work. I'm Grant Turgeon. It is the day after Father's Day, and I have really missed being here on the radio with you all. Yesterday, we celebrated Father's Day with a dinner with all the Turgeons, Flurries, and Hillikers, and I received quite a few gifts, as did all of the six fathers who were there with us. I got a book, candy, a pillow, framed quotes, cards, lots more candy. But the best gift I got was a fishing pole from my wife, Anya. We have two lakes on campus. One of them is just 50 yards from the Hall of Administration where I work, and the other one is less than a quarter mile from where I live. So that's really a great gift. And it even came with a pocket-sized tackle box. So all of the fishing hooks and lures could fit in my pocket. I could sling the fishing pole over my shoulder and hold my daughter in my one free hand. So it's a perfect gift. Really a great Father's Day for all of us, and I'm sure for all of you listening as well. And there really is a direct connection between fathers physically and God's work. Jesus Christ came to earth for the main purpose of declaring his Father. You can find that in John 1 and verse 18. John 4, verse 34 quotes Christ as saying, "My meat is to do the will of him that sent me and to finish his work." So in other words, Christ actually thought that declaring the Father, serving the Father, and doing the Father's work was more crucial to his life than even physical food. As Christians, it is our responsibility to follow that example. So there's a direct connection there as well, you can see, between doing the work and pleasing the Father. God the Father has blessed us with physical family to serve as an exact type of his spiritual family. Within our physical families, a father must strive to represent God, and a mother is a type of the church. Right now, the Philadelphia Church of God is nurturing and protecting its members in the metaphorical womb until our transformation into spirit-born sons of God to marry Christ. God the Father and Christ the Son watch over the church, providing, protecting, and guiding us as a physical father should do for his family. Now, this analogy actually shows us why abortion is wrong. We've talked about that on Trumpet Bookshelf recently, too. Abortion, of course, looks wrong on the surface to sane people because it literally involves the dismemberment of tiny bodies. But I just want you to think about the fact that abortion really would be justifiable if not for God's existence. God the Father, who holds authority over every human, actually wrote the commandment prohibiting murder. Now, if human beings had written that commandment, then it would be completely acceptable for other human beings to write other laws allowing murder. But God alone decides who lives and who dies. Think about states like New York, Illinois, and Vermont that have passed extreme pro-abortion laws. Do you think these legislators have ever pondered who has the authority to give life and to take life away? But the evil of abortion is about so much more than this physical life. And that's brought out pretty plainly in that analogy. Spiritually, abortion pictures a growing, developing member of God's church abandoning God and missing out on an opportunity to be a firstborn son of God. This is the ultimate tragedy. I've been thinking a lot lately about the perfect combination of the roles of father and mother in the physical family. Obviously, we need the nurturing care of the mother, but also the guidance and discipline of the father. And whenever a family is missing either of these important offices, it's obviously quite a disadvantage, a disadvantage that can be overcome, but certainly still a disadvantage. Society definitely tends to glorify the mother, not in her traditional role, but just the mother in general, and they completely disregard the importance of having a father at all. But both of these roles are active roles. They involve a lot of hands-on work. Here's a quote from an article that was posted at thetrumpet.com on March 12, 2008, titled, "The Need for Fathers." Mr. Joel Hilliker writes, "It is common to recognize the mother's role as nurturer, carer, and emotional support. She provides the meals, does the housework, and in many cases earns a good portion of the family income. But what is dad supposed to do? In the minds of many, this is far hazier. Maybe he is the provider, although in more and more homes, mom works and often makes more money than dad. In the minds of most people, the God-ordained role for the father in the family has been obscured completely. Society in general paints that leadership position as being unnecessary. As the first four verses of Isaiah 3 prophesy, God has removed the strong men as a curse on the disobedient nations of modern Israel, which has created a tremendous leadership vacuum. And what has filled the gap? Verse 12, "As for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them." Families are upside down. Women and children are at the top, and the men aren't even mentioned. This is a tremendous problem, and families are devastated when that role of the father is neglected. Studies prove that when the father fails, everyone suffers. Why? Because the whole structure of the family falls apart. God designed human beings physically, emotionally, spiritually, to need fathers. And as Mr. Herbert W. Armstrong wrote in the August 1985 Good News, backing up this quote from Mr. Hilliker, "The very foundation of any stable civilization is a solid family structure." Now, contrary to popular belief today, a solid family structure certainly does consist of a husband, a wife, and children. There are no other variations. That is what a solid family structure is. Think of the family as a human body. Removing the mother would be like removing the arms and the legs. But removing the father is like removing the head. Satan knows this. That's why there's an all-out attack on traditional family in society today. Think about the way that Satan carries out this attack. He causes mothers to become discontent with rearing children and creating a positive atmosphere at home. But what Satan does to fathers is even worse. He makes them disappear. It is possible, of course, for fathers to disappear physically, but fathers can be absent even while technically present physically. By spending too much time at work or in other pursuits, fathers can neglect their children. Neglected boys often become criminals. Neglected girls often seek to fill the void with a boyfriend, becoming sexually active in their teen years and even getting trapped in abusive relationships. All of this suffering simply because the father is not actively involved in their lives. The father has three basic roles, and this is written about in all kinds of PCG literature that you can find at thetrumpet.com. There's also a great book, The Man of Steel and Velvet, that you can find as well. And it does outline pretty clearly these three roles of the father. The first role is that of provider. 1 Timothy 5 and verse 8 says, "But if any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he has denied the faith and is worse than an infidel." So a stay-at-home dad or a dad who is too lazy to go out and work and receives government assistance fraudulently, for example, who is not really providing for his family by working hard like he should, is actually considered worse than an infidel in God's eyes. Now, thankfully, the role of provider is probably the one that is most often fulfilled out of the three. Normally, families can at least provide money. That's a pretty common part of families in the world. But these next two roles are extremely horribly neglected in the world. The second role of the father, besides being a provider, is being a protector. Ephesians 5 verse 25 says, "Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it." This scripture clearly talks about a willingness to sacrifice your life for your wife and for your children by extension. That is ultimate sacrifice right there. Actually, just this morning, I saw a video on Twitter, and it was just a compilation of basically fathers having just split-second reflexes to save children from serious injury or death. There was a video of a child tripping and about to fall on his face onto a brick wall, and the father just snatched that child right out of the air right before the face made impact. There was another video there of a child flinging off of a gymnastics bar and flying well past the mats, only for the father to catch that child out of the air and then do a somersault, all while still holding the child. Another video showed a father chasing away an angry dog that was attempting to attack his child. Another video showed a father pulling his child out of the path of a moving vehicle. And then there are a bunch more clips of fathers catching their children mid-fall, off of a bike, off of a swing, as they tumbled down the stairs, as they careened down a hill, as they fell off a table, out of a boat, off a railing. And then one of those videos showed the father taking a nap and his infant child was falling off the couch. He wakes up and catches that child right before the child hits the ground. So even while sleeping, he had that instinct to protect. But of course, being a protector as a father is not just in the physical safety sense. At home and in public, fathers, of course, want to protect their families from physical harm. But it involves protecting the wife and children from satanic influences. Those influences are prevalent today in society, and those influences can often infiltrate our homes through various types of technological screens, all types of media and entertainment that can really inject into our minds some horrible thoughts and images and ideas. And the father's responsibility is to monitor all that and prevent the wrong types of messages from getting into his home. The father is also responsible for preventing his children from hanging around in bad company, developing friendships with bad children, children who are horribly behaved. This is part of the father's role as not just a physical protector, but a spiritual protector as well. About a year ago, I had the pleasure of hearing a speech at our Edmund Spokesman Club, and the speaker was talking about the doorhead ant. So this is a type of ant who has a flat, circular head, and he can plug the entry of the ant colony by just sticking his head in the hole in the tree. So he goes inside of the ant colony, and then he plugs the hole behind him with his head. So nothing can go into or out of his home without his consent. And that's very much analogous to the role of the physical father. He must be aware of what is happening in his home, in the lives of his wife and children, and he must be ready to protect them from any possible threats. And you could imagine with that ant, maybe a woodpecker wants to get in, and it's pecking away at the head of that doorhead ant, trying to get in. So he is even sacrificing himself sometimes to save the family. So that's the second role of a physical father. First is to be a provider. Second is to be a protector. And third is to be a guide. 1 Timothy 3, verses 4 through 5 says, "One that rules well his own house, having his children in subjection with all gravity. For if a man know not how to rule his own house, how shall he take care of the church of God?" So this passage is talking about qualifications for God's ministers. But God's ministers were first strong family men. They learned to rule their own families before being given the responsibility to care for the church. Like Mr. Armstrong said, families are the foundation of a strong civilization, but they are also the foundation of a strong church. Strong families make strong congregations, which make a strong church. And those families are given their direction by their father. Fathers are supposed to teach respect for authority. They're supposed to teach discipline, work ethic, valuable life skills, perseverance, toughness, so that children can handle life in the real world once they're no longer living with their parents. Now, there are a lot of sobering examples of how when the father fails, we really do suffer, like Mr. Hilliker wrote about in that article previously. Currently, the most watched Netflix show in the United States is a TV series titled When They See Us. This TV series revisits the story of the Central Park Five. And I didn't really understand what this was about, but I vaguely remembered the media trying to attack Mr. Donald Trump when he was running for president in 2016. And they were saying that he ran racist attack ads against the Central Park Five. So then I saw on Twitter a couple weeks ago how everyone was really mad after watching this documentary. And of course, I finally decided to look into it a little bit, understand what it was all about. So Mr. Trump was attacked for these racist ads in 1989. The media said that he was specifically targeting five minority teenagers accused of rape in Central Park. But Mr. Trump's ads never mentioned those kids, and those ads really only expressed support for the police and demanded the return of the death penalty for murder because crime in New York City was rampant at the time. So that's not racist at all, to encourage the police to do their jobs to protect families of all races. And Mr. Trump, obviously, back then, was pro-police, just like he is now. It seems like in 30 years, his message hasn't really changed that much. But the media tried to smear him as being racist and for attacking the Central Park Five when they were never even mentioned in those ads that he took out in the paper. But this Central Park Five group consisted of five boys, and these five boys were part of a much larger wolf pack that roamed Central Park with the sole purpose of beating everyone they saw nearly to death. Now, the police caught these five, and they confessed to a rape before the police knew that a rape had taken place. These boys laughed and sang about it in the police station. But when another man confessed to this crime in 2002, the Central Park Five were released from prison. And in 2016, the New York City mayor awarded them $40 million. To this day, the Central Park Five are heroes to the left. But despite the lies of the media, the Central Park Five are clearly guilty. The stack of evidence confirms this. You have to do some serious digging to find the truth, and the details are far more gruesome than my summary of events. But even the apologists for these five boys have never disputed that they were violently assaulting people that same night. Between 5 and 10 other people beaten nearly to death on that same night. And no one disputes that. That definitely took place, and those boys were definitely involved. Regardless, in the hypothetical, eventuality or the hypothetical situation where these boys weren't involved in the rape, they were still definitely involved in violently assaulting other people in the park. Why were those boys allowed to roam a park with heavy tree cover after dark with dozens of sociopathic boys and men attacking the homeless and the vulnerable? Where were the fathers? I know for a fact one of them has a father because he confessed to the crime with his father present. But was that a really hands-on, involved father? When the boys are roaming the streets, roaming the parks like animals and attacking people like that, is the father really doing his job? Now, obviously, this is an extreme case, but it came out recently, and millions of people are watching this documentary series, this dramatization on Netflix, and they're believing every bit of it, that these boys were wrongly accused, that it's just another instance of racist police. Why is there no focus on the lack of fathers doing their job in this case and in so many other cases? Even Mr. Trump, in those ads, talked about supporting the police, but that doesn't get to the root of the issue. You could think of really any crime, any problem in society, and it does get back to the absence of fathers, whether physically or mentally. Now, you can contrast this disgusting, tragic story with the conduct of families in God's church. Members work every day to master the valuable instruction in Child Rearing with Vision, a new book freely available at thetrumpet.com. Our children have God-fearing fathers and mothers who spend time with them, who save up money to send them to Philadelphia Youth Camp each summer, who carefully mind every word and action so as to set as great of an example as they possibly can. Our children are actually told no once in a while. Our children aren't allowed to keep smartphones and computers in their rooms. Our children are taught boundaries and standards. In the rare cases where a father or mother is absent, dozens of church members eagerly step in to provide solid male and female mentorship. Every fall, when hundreds of church members descend upon each Feast of Tabernacles site, the conduct of our families is so outstanding that hotel and restaurant staffers beg us to come back each year for the rest of time. God's way works. The biblical family model works. Our families, led by our fathers, work hard to please God the Father by doing His work. This church is a family, God's family. Our fathers point us to God the Father. That's the inspiring vision behind Father's Day. Thanks so much for spending some time with me today. I'm Grant Turgeon. This has been Behind the Work.
You've been listening to Behind the Work. Email your thoughts to comments at kpcg.fm. Listen for a new episode each Monday at 11:30 a.m. Central Time.